So last time, as we were getting ready to finish up, we were in Colossians chapter 3, and we were talking about putting on the new self. We mentioned a few things that involves. One being our focus, which is to set our mind on the things above. The second thing we talked about, mortification, or in other words, getting rid of the bad things in our life, getting rid of sin in our life. And then we ended on the idea of this renewal that comes from this, from becoming a Christian. And we gain this by the knowledge of our Creator. And in John, he says those who become Christians are not born of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. So again, nationality, what we come into this world as doesn't matter in the eyes of Christ, in the eyes of God. It depends, everything depends upon our response to the gospel. That is what matters. Now, as we close this, if you look in Colossians chapter 3, in verse 12, there's traits or characteristics that come about as a result of this renewal that we've talked about. So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. And beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. So again, these are the things that we should be doing, not only here in the local, but with other people outside of the church, but especially within here. We ought to encourage each other by loving each other, by being compassionate when the need arises, always showing kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. If you look in verse 16, he says, "Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to Him, to God the Father." Now, I mean, that's why I say that when he talks about these characteristics, again, he's referencing here that we should that we're admonishing one another all the time. So, I mean, I think that the characteristics here especially mean for us that if nobody else, we treat each other like this. And we should be, our goal should be to treat everybody in this way. That we show Christ to other people, not only in what we teach to other people, but in how we live our lives. We know that He went about doing good to all people. And teaching God's truth, but also if He saw a need, if He saw someone who was sick, He took care of that. He lent comfort to those who needed comfort. So these are the things that we should be concentrating on. And those things, as we work in these ways to show this new person that we've become, I think it does allow us to become more thankful for what we've received. When we actually become that new person, and we're not just talking about it, but we actually are that person, it makes us more thankful for what we have. You think about the gift that we have to be able to be together, to encourage each other in the Word of God. It's a great thing. And I'm afraid a lot of times, and I'm probably as guilty as anybody else, take that for granted. I mean, not everywhere has what we have here. I mean, there's places where, I mean, Judy and I, when we've traveled, we've been in places, there is no congregation. There is nobody that we know of. And I mean, I remember when we were in Los Angeles, and we thought, of all the millions of people that are here, there was one or two congregations, I think, in the whole city, and it wasn't that big. So, I mean, think about that. Millions of people in a spot, and there's hardly anybody there that that comes together in fellowships as in the church. So, in a place like this, we have each other, and we have this opportunity, and we, as Christ showed us, we ought to love each other, have compassion for each other, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, encouraging each other in these things, edifying each other, and teaching each other. And so, I mean, it really is. We have a good opportunity all the time, and we really are blessed in many ways here. So let's keep that in mind. I'm struck at times, you know, one of the sins that Israel had, this is looking at Isaiah the other night, one of the sins that struck me was this, is that they had so much that they weren't as thankful or grateful to God as they should have been. And it showed in the rest of their lives because they showed up for the worship service, they did the sacrifices, did all those things, but God didn't rejected all those things because their life wasn't in keeping with those things that they were doing in the worship service. And we need to be careful that we have so much in this country. We take so much for granted. It's not like in other countries where you have to worry about so much about getting shot, you know, all the time and war and everything else and having no food to eat and none of these and all these kind of things. We don't have those kind of problems, really. We see them sometimes, occasionally in this country on the news, but we've not seen that here. And we need to be thankful for what we've been given because it's not. I mean, a lot of the reason that we have what we have is a matter of we just happen to be born here. I mean, if we're born in Ethiopia and there's no food, I mean, we don't have the life we have right now. It's like you said in the prayer, all these things that we have, it's not because of anything we've done. God gave them to us. And we need to remember that in everything we do. And we tend to want to get in our minds that I've worked and got made this happen. Maybe partially, but it wouldn't be possible if God hadn't given these things to us to be able to get. So let's keep those things in mind as we go along that we constantly need to be thankful to God for all the blessings that we have. So tonight, what I was hoping to get into was the idea of relationships. So Paul, as he wrote the prison epistles, because he wrote this in Ephesians as well, wrote instructions to Christians as how we're to behave in our various relationships with people, whether it's family or work, in order to be acceptable to God. How we treat others is an indication of our relationship to God. We think about the two great commandments. I mean, the first command being love God completely. And the second one is like it, love your neighbor. You're not going to do the second. If we don't do the first commandment right, nothing else falls into place. We're not going to love our neighbors the way that we should if we don't love God the way we should first. It has to be in that order. So, if our family relationships and our work relationships, if we have poor relationships as a result of what we're doing, it's an indication that our relationship with God is not what it should be. Okay? So it's a key indicator, but it's also important because the relationships we have with our family especially, but even with our coworkers, has an impact on them as well as us. So, if I do a poor job in my house, it doesn't just end up affecting me. It affects my wife. It affects my kids because I've done a poor job. So, as we talk about here, I mean, it may hinder our relationship to God, and none of us will be responsible for hindering somebody else in their relationship to God. So, something to think about. Someone read verse 18 of chapter 3 of Colossians.
Wives, submit to your own husbands
we're going to talk about wives first. Turn to Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 22. Someone read that, please.
Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord.
Okay. And also in verse 33, someone read that, of Ephesians 5. So, and another word for fear, the translation I have says respect. Respect her husband. So, he compares the relationship between the man and the wife as between Christ and the church. As the church is subject to Christ, the wife should be subject to the husband. Let's look at Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. Let's think about let's go back to the beginning where he created us, and we're going to look at the role of the wife first, and then we'll look at the role of the husband. So I'm going to read verses 2 and verse 18.
Then the Lord God said, "It is not good for man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him."
Okay.
Now, so he said, "I'm going to make woman. She's a suitable helper." If God made a helper for man, what does that imply about man? He needs help. Okay? So, think about that. Think about it in those terms.
People tend to get caught up in this superior role versus inferior, and that is not what he's saying here at all. He's saying the man needed help, and so he made woman, and she was fit for that job, just like man is fit for other jobs. So help what? That's the other question. Okay, he needs help. Help doing what? Think about this. I looked at it was this. What is man's purpose on this earth? Okay. Fear God. Keep commandments, right? I think God put man and woman together because they help each other do that very thing. If both do their role the way it's supposed to be done, that's what we're helping each other do. Okay? Look at Proverbs chapter 31. This is a little bit of a lengthy reading, but I think that this says much better than I can say what the ideal woman is supposed to it is here. So if we look in chapter 31, and I'll start in verse 10. "An excellent wife, who can find? For her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of her kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and bless her. Her husband also, and he praises her, saying, "Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates." This is, I mean, this is what, ideally, the woman is, this is why she's perfect for man. If you look at all the different things all the different traits that's mentioned here, so she's somebody that works, that continually is doing good and not evil. Is one who is able. He says here, able to teach, strength and dignity being her clothing. I mean, and again, her husband and her children recognize what the worth that she has and that she brings to the family. That's what he's talking about, I think, in Colossians here, is he's talking about the woman living her life in this way. And gosh, I mean, how could that not be helpful to anybody? Like my wife says sometimes, it was one of these days it sure be nice to have a wife like that. So, you know, she's going to get her one of these days. But think about though this in those terms. So the family relationship here is for the woman, this is what she does. Now, for the man, any comments or statements about any of that? So, go back to Ephesians chapter 5. Someone read verse 25, please.
Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her.
Okay. Now, and if you read through the rest of this, verse 28 says, "So husbands also ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church, because we are members of his body. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." Now, I know in this instance he's comparing the church, the Christ and the church to the marriage relationship, but this is the idea that we want to have here. So the woman is a suitable helper. Man is suitable to do what? What is he to do? Self-sacrificial type love that he's talking about right here. So, part of the problem at times is this, I know you've heard this before. Well, my wife doesn't respect me. Well, do you love her in this way? I mean, it does have to be a two-way street here. And each one has to do the role. And if one doesn't do the role, it makes it a lot more difficult for the other to do theirs. So if my wife doesn't respect me and she's not going to help me at all, it makes it harder for me to do what I should be doing. Doesn't give me an excuse not to do it, but it's more difficult.
the same way, if I'm not living up to my responsibility, it makes it much more difficult for my wife to respect me the way that she should do it. It's just harder to do. Because I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do.
And if you're not doing what you're supposed to do, what's the respect about that? If I don't fulfill my responsibilities, why do I deserve to be respected? You don't. So, for this to work, both parties have to do their job, have to help each other to be the family unit that we're supposed to be, to help each other get to heaven, which is what the goal is here. So, let's look at a few verses here that deal with this. Someone read Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 9.
Live joyfully with thy wife, whom thou hast loved all the days of the life of thy vanity, which hath given thee under the sun all the days of thy vanity. For that is thy portion in this life, and in thy labor which thou hast taken under the sun.
It's a gift from God. He gave Adam Eve. It's a gift from God. And so many times, at least in our culture, we certainly make things harder on ourselves and are not thankful for the gifts that God has given us because we throw away relationships, throw away people that we've been blessed with. I mean, how many people do you know that's thrown away their family? It happens all the time. Both the man and the woman. I mean, both do it in our culture. I think we've basically encouraged it in our culture. We made it easy to do. So we need to think about that. This is a gift from God and it's a solemn responsibility that each one of us takes on when we decide to become married. We need to remember that. And especially those who are not married at this time, that have not been married yet, need to think about these things very carefully. Because not only do you destroy your own life, you're destroying somebody else's life and potentially destroying kids' lives by not doing what you're supposed to do. So again, these relationships, I mean, they're so close and so tight that if one person doesn't do what they're supposed to do, again, you're potentially hindering somebody else from going to heaven, making it hard for them to do it. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8. But if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Part of the man's responsibility is to provide for his household. And we're not talking about people that are unable to do it because of health reasons and all this other stuff. We're talking about if you're able to do something, then you should be doing it. And if you don't provide, he's basically saying you can't get any sorrier than that. So he's denied the faith and worse than an unbeliever. How can he be worse than an unbeliever? Think about what he's saying there. So think on those things. That's part of our responsibility. 1 Peter chapter 3. Verse 7. You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. Be understanding, be patient. As we talked about traits a few minutes ago that we should have for each other in the church, we ought to have those at home too. That we should be able to be patient, understanding, kind, compassionate, all those things. Because if we don't do those things, our prayers will be hindered. If there's discord in the house, how is that going to affect our relationship with God? So We've got to work on these things.
That takes to 1 Peter 3:7. It always struck me and impressed me that he says, give honor unto the wife. Sometimes we may approach it, I'll make her earn the honor. She doesn't deserve the honor. And there's people that in our life that we give honor to because maybe they're our elders or our grandparents, whatever the case may be. And this text is telling us to give honor to our wives. Not to make them earn it, not to wait it out, but to give honor. And that should be something we freely give to our spouse.
Yeah. It only makes sense anyway. You think if you didn't think anything about that person, why would you marry him in the first place? So I mean, once you've made that decision, then it shouldn't just be give honor and right up until you get married. I mean, it should be this should be something that we should get. I mean, grow as we go along, hopefully. But you're right. It's not sometimes. Sometimes we get so, I think we're so close to people that we forget of that we get too, I think we take too many things for granted sometimes. Whereas, you know, if I come into CL's house, I'm gonna wipe my feet before I go in. I'm gonna make sure I do all the things that I should do to be courteous because he's having me in his house. Well, why should I walk into the house and not wipe my feet, doing these other things? And I mean, just total disrespect. She's worked to clean the house. She's done all this stuff already, and now I'm going to come in here and just tear it all up and not give it a second thought. I mean, I know that's a small example, but it's meant to illustrate other things too. We need to consider each other. And not take too many things for granted. I mean, keep those things in mind.
I like using the illustration about marriage, about a three-legged race. If kids have done it a three-legged race, you know, if you only have one person doing the three-legged race, you're going to fall.
That's right.
And it takes both people to cooperate to get to the finish line. And this is like a marriage. You've got to take a three-legged race. You know, if it don't take both of you guys to get it to the end, it's lives,
yeah.
You know, and
it's a team effort.
Right, I like using that illustration. Yeah. It really makes a difference. Everybody's done that three-legged race thing.
So, the idea again of the idea of the helpmeet that Eve was for Adam, a mutually beneficial relationship, trying to encourage each other in the Lord, raising children together in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Okay, that's so. Everything is the. In other words, the overriding goal is to do the things that God would have us to do. So, being together on those things is going to be very important. As far as fathers and children, if you go to Ephesians chapter 6 again. Someone read verse 1. So, children's job in the family is to obey the parents. Now, again, ideally, the father and the mother both love God, and so you know, when you have families where that doesn't happen, it makes it more difficult for the children to do what they're supposed to do too. So, if I come home and I'm a tyrant and I'm constantly making my kids' life miserable, well. I've probably I've caused things to happen in such a way that they're not probably going to disobey because I'm not done my job right. So now, why should you expect a child who is not as mature as an adult to do everything right when you're not doing it right? So we have to be role models for the kids. We all know that we have a Father in heaven that we need to honor. That we need to honor Him just as we expect our kids to honor us. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Why? Why does that matter?
Because
He said, don't exasperate your children. Why? What happens when you get exasperated?
Unrealistic expectations.
Yeah.
I mean, if I get exasperated with a job, generally what happens is people quit finally. Quit.
I'm exasperated with this. I've had all I can take of this. When we exasperate our children, don't expect them to continually on and on and on just take this. They're finally going to say, well, there is no pleasing this guy. Forget it. So that's what he's saying. So we need to teach our kids discipline, and we need to train them up in the instruction of the Lord. And we need to be examples for that. And I mean, we know that Christ loved the church and gave himself for the church. Fathers, that should be the idea, not only for our wives, but for our children too. That we're willing to sacrifice to see that they know what they're supposed to know, and that they have the example they should have. So hopefully when they grow up, they decide they want to be Christians too. But if the only, you know, I've seen people who, I can think of a person that I worked with in Corbin who would not hear of becoming a Christian. And I asked once, why? She said, well, my mom and dad were Christians and they treated me awful. If that's why that is, I don't want anything to do with that. That's what we're talking about here in the family unit. If we don't do our job, we exasperate either a wife or a husband, or exasperate children finally, and maybe they get lost because of that. Or we at least contribute to that. Everybody answers for themselves eventually, but we don't want to be the ones that contributes to that. So think on these things. Think about what it is that we have to do. We won't get into. Was that the second bill? It was, wasn't it? Okay. So next time we'll talk briefly, and actually I'll be here next week. We'll talk briefly about work relationships.